Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's up, guys? Really grateful you guys are listening to the pod. I would love it if you could take just 5 seconds to leave a rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you might be listening to this. It really goes a long way to spread the message, which would allow me to get better guests to add more value to your life. And if you're one of the special people that have helped spread the word on this podcast, I am deeply appreciative of your support. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, my name is Kimmy Inch.
I'm a professional dominatrix. I like motivational spanker.
Professional kink and BDSM expert.
Of kink, somatic therapy, and how we can transmute pain into pleasure.
Are there any commonalities of what men find more kinky versus what women do?
I have to say.
How do you define kink?
Yeah. So how do we look at things that are really surface, like dirty talk, like spanking, like role play, and how it can actually not only be an erotic, fun thing that could be pleasurable for me and my partner, but it actually could benefit us somehow. We can bring that outside of the bedroom, into our work, into our friendships, into society.
When it comes to attraction or maintaining desire, are there differences between men and women that you find that are more common?
You know, when it comes to, like, on a biological level.
Welcome to Growth Minds. Whether it's your first time here or you've been here before, I'm curious to know what it is that brought you here. And if you can, smash that like button below. It really helps spread our message to more people. All right, on to the episode. All right, boom. Kimmy.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah, very excited to have you.
Thank you for begging me. No, I'm just kidding. That didn't happen.
No, that comes off camera. Come on. We talked about this already. I'm really excited to have you on. This is such a new, fresh topic that I'm personally not averse to. And I'm so excited to just pick your brain about how you've come about this expertise and this experience that you've had. How did you first get started? And would it be right to call it, like, the, on your website at least, it was the BDSM lifestyle, you're a somatic therapist, core energetic practitioner.
Yes.
Where did this all start and originate from?
It's funny you say that, because I tell people it really started when I was 10 years old. Yes.
Whoa.
And I'll explain. So I was watching an R-rated movie with my mom called Basic Instinct.
Okay.
And in that movie, there's a lot of violently sexual scenes. And during one of those scenes, my mom turned to me and she looked at me and she said, "You should not be watching this." And I'm like 10 or 11 years old at the time. And I just went, like, all of these chemicals got released into my body. My heart started racing. My stomach was flip-flopping. My genitals were tingling. I'm sweating. And I remember in that moment thinking to myself, oh, then it feels so good to do things we're not supposed to be doing.
Oh, interesting. The restriction.
Yes,
got you.
The naughtiness, the taboo of it all. It was like literally the first moment of me really experiencing my arousal and all of these sort of chemicals being released into my body, which I wasn't aware of at the time. But it was such a feeling of aliveness that it had really left this big impression on me. And I talk a lot about these impressions because people get curious around where their desires and fantasies come from. And oftentimes it comes from the impressions that we had as we were growing up around sex, intimacy, relationships, and love. So fast forward, and I'm in high school with my first boyfriend, and he's 16 years old, and I'm 16 years old, and we have sex for the first time together. And probably three times in, I'm like, oh God, is this it? And I was like, let's switch it up a little bit. Like, let's dress up and pretend we're different people.
Yeah.
And let's tie each other up. Like 16.
16,
yeah,
okay.
It was my first boyfriend. We were madly in love at the time, as 16-year-olds can be.
Yeah.
And he was just like, happy to have sex at all. But he was like, why do you need all this weird shit? Mm. And I didn't know why at the time. It didn't make sense to me because no one was talking about, yeah. you know, these sort of kinky activities that I was interested in. But still, I was imagining and having these creative scenarios in my head that would be considered kinky. Mm. Anyway, you know, fast forward again, it's 2001 and I'm living in Tokyo as a DJ.
No way.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
That's right.
Oh, so cool.
My travels, I've been wearing a lot of different hats, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So eventually people started asking me to do DJ at fetish parties. And up until that point, my idea of kink and fetish and all of that was like Pulp Fiction, bring out the gimp and like hoods and like just scary, intimidating, intense things, whips, chains, things like that. And that did not interest me whatsoever. But when I started DJing at these fetish parties, it felt like everything clicked into place. It felt like I had come home because I was witnessing these people creating these scenarios that were already in my head, but they were doing it with fun and pleasure and imagination and these crazy costumes and outfits.
Yeah. Especially in a foreign country, in Japan, where you don't know the language. Like
exactly.
You felt at home there.
I did. I was like, oh, these are my people. And
wow.
They were so welcoming and really like, you know, wanted to help educate me in what this whole world was. And I eventually met professional dominatrixes, most of them expats. And they kind of took me under their wing and showed me this world of what it means to be a professional dominatrix. Mm. And I just was like absolutely mesmerized by the psychology of it. And also what I didn't actually understand at the time, I was also really interested in the energy that I was feeling in these scenarios. And like, why do we have the desires we have? Why do we have the fantasies we have? Mm. And are we actually tapping into what our bodies are truly capable of? So I got really curious. I went back to school to study somatic therapy because I just felt like there was something more for me to learn here. And as a somatic therapist, you know, I was learning about the body, our connection to mind and body, of course, how important that is, but also our own energy and how it's so important to have these relational experiences in order to heal. And we need human contact in order to rewire our brains even.
Sure.
So along with that training, I was doing some tantra and continuing my conscious kink sort of journey and bringing all of those elements together. And instead of just doing classic somatic therapy work, I actually let go of my licensure so I wouldn't have the red tape that comes along with being licensed. And I started creating these coaching experiences, because you can say coach and get away with a lot of things. So I was doing these coaching sessions, which were very therapeutic, very educational and very empowering, and helping people kind of feel into like what their bodies were capable of experiencing and how their erotic energy was really linked to their life force and how they show up in the world. So,
and this combination you call core energetics?
Yeah, so so one of the modalities I trained in as a somatic therapist is called core energetics, which is similar to Peter Levine's somatic experiencing. And it's really, really dynamic. So you're using things like family constellation work, you're using scenarios where you're almost like acting out or like playing out different traumas and having a new experience of it. So your body can have a bodily visceral experience of something, because again, you have to go beyond your mind in order to heal. So when your body's actually feeling a scenario where it can feel safe and have sort of a do-over situation, that can be really powerful. Put that in an erotic setting on top of it all, where there's sexual energy involved and there's tantra and kinky elements involved, and it just takes things to a whole other level. Mm. And what you're doing, instead of trauma-informed care, you're going with a process called pleasure-informed care. You're letting the pleasure of your body lead you instead of the trauma leading you.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a really—
more positive way to approach—
really positive and more sustainable. Also, the idea of moving from our trauma, that's just not a sustainable model.
Sure.
And so it's important to honor those parts and places of ourselves. But it's also like, how do we get back to the truth and wisdom of our pleasure? Because our bodies are wired for pleasure. As much programming as we've received that it's wrong and it's bad and it's self-indulgent, it's actually really a pathway to our healing and our empowerment. Hmm.
How do you define kink?
Yeah. So I borrow a definition that Jaya Ma, who created the erotic blueprints, has used, but I've expanded it a bit. So the definition of kink that I live by is that you are turned on by the taboo. And it could be what you're turned on by or what you consider taboo, or it could be what your culture considers to be taboo, yeah. or your religion or society. So for some cultures, you know, talking dirty and premarital sex is taboo,
right.
you know, and then other cultures, it's okay if you have premarital sex, but you can't do ABC, right? You can't, you know, have gay sex, for example. Mm. So there's certain ways that it depends on where you come from, what you consider to be taboo, but it's the taboo nature to kink that gives it the juice that it has. Mm. Because without it feeling taboo, there's none of that like electricity and none of that like, ooh, I shouldn't be doing this. Like I told you earlier, my mom yeah. said, you shouldn't be watching this. And my whole body like, had a yeah, reaction of like, ooh,
yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm being
more.
So bad. Yeah, like, I love it. And that's what kink is essentially. And yeah. the kind of kink that I work with is conscious kink. So the conscious kink is very similar to regular kink, except that there's a high level of intention for the act of being kinky. Hmm. So instead of just coming together for a slap and a tickle, you're really coming together to maybe dive into the depths of intimacy. Maybe you want to reach euphoric states to help you sort of interrupt patterns, and you want to feel unconditional love, like very similar to medicine journeys,
sure.
like MDMA and psilocybin. But there's just a sense of there's more emphasis around the connection of the players as opposed to the experience. So connection's really important. Communication, trust, all of these things come into play when you're doing conscious kink. It's very yeah. different than just having sex with someone and then like spanking their ass and asking them, you know, who's your daddy? Like that's right. not the kind of kink I'm talking about.
Sure,
you know
sure.
what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you think, you mentioned Japan and that becoming kind of this hub of where you discover dominatrix and everything.
Yeah.
Do you think that if taboo and kink really comes from tabooness,
mm-hmm.
do you think that cultures that were more repressed, let's say I grew up, I was born in Korea, very conservative compared to, and I was visiting Japan a lot, very conservative to Canada, obviously very conservative to the States. Do you think that cultures and maybe people that grew up in those more repressed or religious places have more kink that they're suppressing
yeah.
versus someone that's grew up in a very open-minded family?
Liberal. Yeah, it's a good yeah. question, right? Because even with all of the work I've done on myself, the stuff that I'm interested in and get turned on by, I don't personally think it's that taboo because of my journey in life. But I know my religion, which was Catholic, would think so. And, you know, my family members would think so. So there's an essence that's alive in all of that as well. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of connection between how much repression there is in a society or in an individual's life and how that sexual energy has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't just vanish and disappear. If it's getting squished down and it's getting repressed and it's getting denied and it's getting exiled, it's going to go somewhere. And what normally happens is that it taps into our imaginations. And it's really interesting because our bodies are super clever and really, really smart. And a lot of times the clients that I've worked with, when we've sort of picked apart their fantasies and their desires, we've kind of come to a lot of conclusions that a lot of the times we're always eroticizing the needs that were unmet as we were growing up as children.
So it's mostly it goes back to childhood.
A lot of it does because yeah. that's when our initial impressions were.
Right.
Yeah. Like there was this one client that I had, this woman who was an interior designer, and she hadn't had an orgasm in like maybe 15, 20 years.
Wow.
And she had reached out to me because she had seen sex therapists, she'd seen doctors, she's done all the things she could think of. Still, even if she was self-pleasuring, she could not have an orgasm. But she was very interested in the idea of BDSM and kink and had reached out to me because she had heard about the energetic work that I was doing. So I sat down with her and I do these like 2-hour intakes. And I got a lot of information around what are you into? What are you interested in exploring? And then I start digging into the history. And I start asking her a little bit about, tell me about your relationship to sex growing up. Like, how did you learn about it? What were the impressions that you had around sexuality? Like, were your parents affectionate with each other? Like, you know, tell me all the things. What she shared was that when she started learning about her body and exploring her body around 3 or 4 years old, she remembers like being playing in her bed and she was like rubbing her genitals on a pillow. And she realized that that made her feel really good. So she was like, oh, this is cool, you know? And so as an innocent child does, was like, I'm going to follow the pleasure. I'm going to follow this.
That's most people,
not thinking
right?
there's anything bad about
sure.
it. But when she would get caught, her mother would scold her. She would beat her. She would punish her. All of these sort of things. So she would keep trying to follow the pleasure. But when she would get caught, she would continuously get punished to the point that she said, it's too dangerous. Her body made a decision. It's too dangerous to have pleasure. Because if I'm caught having my pleasure, I could be punished for it, or I could I could be unloved. And if to a child with that, you know, they think their parents are their whole world, that could mean death to a child. Right. So it's almost like this life or death situation. So I'm, you know, collecting all this information. I know she shared some of this with her therapist in the past. But what I wanted to do was actually bring it into a scenario where she could actually play it out and have a different experience.
Sure.
So given the parameters of what we discussed, I created this scene for her. We're taking her through an experience where I'm leading her through her fantasy. I'm sort of dominating her. She's following. I'm tying her up. I'm doing sensation play. I'm doing impact play. And at one point near the end of the scene, I have her tied at the end of my four-poster bed. And she's at the very edge of the bed, and I have both of her arms tied to each pole, and I have her knees, she's kneeling, yeah. I have each knee tied to each pole. So she's kind of like an X figure, just sitting at the edge of the bed. And I start shoving pillows between her legs. And she's like, I can see in her eyes, like, oh my God, what's going on? And because we hadn't discussed any of this.
Right, right.
I'm shoving pillows under her legs, and I tell her, I want you to ride those pillows, and I want you to have an orgasm. And she's like, okay. And so she's like kind of riding on the pillows. And I'm like, look me right in the eyes. And I want you to hear this. You are so beautiful. You deserve to have pleasure. Your body was made for pleasure. And I'm so sorry that someone told you the lies that they told you. You are worthy. You are enough. And she's riding the pillows and she's crying.
Oh my God.
And she's crying and she's shaking.
Damn.
And she starts having this full body orgasm, not really from the genitals, but from her heart and from her soul and like the depths of her beingness. And it was just a really powerful moment to have this like redo of a scenario that really kept her from what she really wanted in life. Literally from that day forward, she once again had access to her pleasure and her access to her orgasm. And that's no longer a problem anymore.
Would you say for a lot of the clients that you help resolve that at the end of the day, it comes down to you giving them permission to feel that the way they should? That it's, they've been repressing for a while?
It's so true. Permission is a big part of it. And it makes me sad because who the fuck am I to give anyone permission? But that's really kind of what it boils down to, that it's okay that you feel this way and that you're interested in this. And sometimes that's all that somebody needs to hear, and to trust that they are lovable and that they're valuable and that they're worthy and enough. And that they're not too much, and all of those stories that come along with being, you know, rejected and punished and things like that. So yeah, permission is a big part of the work that I do in my classes and my one-on-one work. It's like really like saying like, this is okay. Like you're not alone and you don't have to do this alone either.
I'd be curious, because before we dig into kind of the work that you do with clients, and I think people hear kink, BDSM, all of these things. And in today's society, it's so easy to judge because you see a TikTok headline or you see an Instagram post here and there. What do you think are the biggest and most common misconceptions that people have about who you are as a person and also the work that you do to serve others?
Yeah, it's so funny. You know, people will reach out to me. I have a big following on TikTok and a decent size on Instagram, but people will reach out to me and like, I'm so surprised you're so nice. And I'm like,
what
did you expect? Like, I'm very nice. I'm like, you know, I'm a very kind, like loving person. Because I don't walk around like thinking I own the world and everyone in it. But it's really interesting what sort of stories people make up around kink and BDSM, but rightly so, because if you look at the media and you look at what's been on TV shows and in movies and things like that, you're going to see a lot of dysfunction and a lot of abuse and a lot of unconsensual acts and a lot of violence that is disguised to being kinky and erotic. And that's really confusing for people to understand. So being able to like really like rewire that part of our brains to be like, this is all consensual and is actually agreed upon and it's sought after it being beneficial, not only for the players in the room, but for the world at whole. Like, I don't do anything in an erotic setting that I think actually might not serve the world as a whole.
Sure.
So it could be anything from, like, you know, kink is violent and abuse, and that our bodies don't know the difference between violence and kink, which is incorrect. And our bodies do understand if we're having a lot of trust, safety, communication, and things like that. It's a very different experience than when you were, you know, 5 years old getting spanked because you, you know, did something bad, as opposed to being consensually doing that as adults in an erotic punishment. Your body registers the sensations very differently. But yeah, also people, when they hear I'm a dominatrix, their head goes to like, oh, a woman who wears head to toe leather and likes to abuse men for a living. Cool,
right.
You know?
Right. All the porn that they probably watch has also influenced them, right?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Instead of this idea of like, well, as a dominatrix, I don't really use that term. I use erotic leader. That's a term that I've coined, and I teach people how to be erotic leaders. And as an erotic leader, my focus is really on the principles of erotic leadership, which is presence, accountability, creativity, surrender, heart, collaboration. I could go on, but it's really like keeping those ideas in mind, holding space and giving someone an opportunity to really fully be expressed. And so it better serves them and their higher good. Like, that's kind of what I do in those spaces. And that's what I want to teach people how to do in their lives.
Powerful.
Yeah.
I want to get into some of the juicy stuff, which is, well, for people that, let's say you're a couple and you have been together for maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years.
Right.
Sometimes marriage for 50, you know, 30 years. And they hear you and they want to spice up their sex life, but maybe this is a world that they're not versed in, right? They don't really know where to start. What is a good place to start for someone that, you know, they've just had regular sex, normal sex, and they're happy, but they want to spice things up, but they hear that dominatrix maybe seems too intimidating for some people.
Sure. Yeah, that's a big leap, right?
It is a big leap. Or they just don't really know where to start.
Yeah.
So what is like a safer or avenue to get people into that door path?
I love that you're asking this because I'm all about baby steps, you know, because it's so easy to get kind of swept up in the excitement of newness and novelty. But it can also like... can almost traumatize people if they're not really going at the pace that their body needs them to go. Sure. And that can cause a lot of issues moving forward. So, you know, when I think about being interested in what else, like you're in this long-term relationship and you're like, what else is there, babe? Like I encourage people to really talk and communicate about the what else, what's more. I, in fact, encourage people to actually create a date with their partner to be like, hey, I would love to have an experience where we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about our desires and we're going to talk about possibilities and we're going to have like a conversation about these things. And like actually setting the intention of like exploring like what else is there for us, and is there a way that we can kind of come together and agree upon what that journey could look like. So really being intentional around creating a conversation around this. And then there's a lot of resources that you can incorporate into this conversation if you like. I have a free kink checklist, which is basically a list of possibilities. Okay. That's all it is. And when I say kink, once again, keep in mind that it's just sort of an idea that some of these might feel a little naughty and a little taboo, depending on where you come from. But essentially, it's just a list of possibilities that you can explore with your partner. And you can actually sit down with your partner and not necessarily go through a list of like spanking, yes, bondage, no, dirty talk, yes. Like, it's not like that kind of checklist. It's just an opportunity to start a conversation around like, when you see these words of spanking or bondage, like, how does it make your body feel? Do you feel curious? Do you feel terrified? Let's have a conversation about it. Like, let's start there and notice what's the information that's coming from our bodies.
Yeah.
Because I might be I'm curious about that. And my partner might be like, that sounds awful. Then I would say, you know, listen, I looked on this kink checklist. I'm a fuck yes to spanking, but Sean, you're saying you're not.
I am not.
Let's say we were to be that couple, right? You're like, actually. He's like, that's incorrect, ma'am.
Excuse me.
And I would even go as far as saying like, well, I would like to share what my vision of spanking could look like, because maybe the vision you have is completely different than mine. Like yours might be, again, you didn't do the dishes right. I'm going to punish you and spank you. Mine might be like, I have this vision of like using it to move energy in my body. And in fact, in this very tantric sense, our hands and our arms are extensions of our heart, our fourth chakra.
Sure.
And when you're spanking someone on their bottom, you're actually activating their first chakra. So I have this idea of being spanked in this way where my partner's really in their hearts, they're extending their hearts through their hands, they're touching my first chakra, and we're manifesting wealth and abundance in my life. Mm. Like that's the kind of spanking I'm talking about. Given that new information, is there a curiosity around maybe exploring that with me, not as a way of punishing me or causing me pain, but as a way of helping me open and call in more of what I want in life?
Sure.
Right? And then that partner might be like, oh, that's a total reframe of what I thought spanking was. My idea of spanking is not the same as yours.
Right.
And these are just like the tip of the iceberg of how deep these conversations can go. And then you can also, you know, dive into like what has been some of your turn-ons, you know, over the years, and what are the things you've always wanted to try and never felt like the courage to talk about. And just talking about those things can be so vulnerable and so connecting and so enlivening to the spirit. You know what I mean? So first things first, like see if you can actually have a conversation. If you're not in partnership, I would still recommend looking at this kink checklist and feeling into your body and feeling into, you know, where are you at right now in your life? Where are some of the places that feel excited about some of these possibilities? Where are the fears lying? Because there's a lot of gold in that information. There's so much gold. We take so much for face value and at the surface.
Right.
But if we were willing to dig a little deeper, there's so much that can be gained and learned from that information.
So true. Because I think if you're not in the world, maybe because you have different perspectives of like what it even means to be kinky in a relationship or with sex, that checklist is so important because it opens up ideas that maybe you didn't even know existed. And it just kind of allows you to have the conversation in the first place and put a safe place to do that.
Yeah.
For people that maybe are just about to explore this, are there any commonalities of what men find more kinky versus what women do, just based on your experience?
Yeah, you know, people are very curious around those questions. Yeah. And I have to say, like, it's really hard for me to generalize in these scenarios often.
Sure.
Because there is such a wide variety. It's almost like more interested in like where has some of their family history lied and some of their like initial impressions around sexuality. There might be some similar veins as opposed to gender specifically.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, you know, I work with a lot of men who are dealing from shame because they're interested in the idea of submission. Like they're really interested in being dominated by a woman or by someone. And a lot of men struggle with that. You know, there's a lot of
masculinity,
our culture,
ego,
that's like, how could you let a woman dominate you? Oh my God, right, like you're so weak and things like that. I remember I was at this play party. I hold a lot of play parties in Austin, and I had this couple approach me, and the woman was really excited and the man was very reserved. And she's like, I really want you to dominate my partner, and he's never been dominated before. And I was like, is this something that you want? He's like, I don't know. I feel like I've never done this. I've always been dominant my whole life, but I'm curious about it, and you come really highly regarded, and so I'm curious. And I was like, okay, let's talk a little bit about like what are some of the fears. And he's like, well, I don't want to be emasculated, and I don't want to feel weak, and I don't want to feel like pathetic, and you know, I don't want to feel bad about myself. And I was like, okay, like what if we created a scenario where it was actually in service to your wholeness, and like I was actually going to actually step into the authority, not to have power over, but to have power with. So I created this scenario for him where we basically played into the scenario that it was in ancient times. And in ancient times, men would go away to war for months and months at a time.
Right.
And before they were able to return back to society after the war was over, they would have to stop at the temple where the priestesses lived. And the priestesses would use a variety of different tactics to help mend the men and help bring them back to their hearts again. They would use everything from you know, sexual tactics to kinky tactics, and literally taking off the armor they were wearing, but then also figuratively and energetically taking off the armor that was there.
Sure.
So I was applying this context to the scene that we were doing and letting him know this is to help you take off your armor because the war is over. Come back to your heart again, while incorporating things like impact play, bondage, things of that nature, but the context was different. Mm. And he was just crying and like felt like so held and so seen because him, me and his partner, she was also acting as a co-priestess as part of this experience.
The more dominant?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So it was the more dominant role technically, but essentially it didn't feel like we were trying to dominate him in the sense of what we were trying to uplift him and up-level him and guide that process. So giving him a completely different reframe. But, you know, even if a man wanted to be specifically, you know, power over and dominated by another person, I mean, I think that just creates a lot of balance in life because so often these men are at the head of their companies, they're CEOs, they have Fortune 500 companies, or they're in powerful positions, or they're the breadwinners in their own household. And sometimes the body and the spirit just wants some balance and they actually want to like let go and not be responsible for anything. It feels fairly natural to want harmony in your own energetic system. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You use the word that I resonated more because I think a lot of men, when they hear being dominated, it kind of immediately sets that ego trigger alarm, right?
Totally. I'm not going to be dominated. Yeah. I would never be dominated. No way.
Right,
and I'm like,
right.
But you want to dominate your partner. Hmm. But it's okay for her to be submissive to you, but you would never be submissive. Do you know what kind of energy you're sort of relaying to the energy field at whole?
Yeah.
You have a judgment over submission. You have a judgment around surrender. So you're going to infect your partner who you want to surrender to you, but you're going to actually have this thing that you're holding unconsciously that you look down on her for it. So what is it about this idea of surrender that's so terrifying to you? Because the person who's in surrender is actually the one in power. Mm. Like it's so easy to give. It's really hard to receive.
Right.
That's the scary place to be. That's the exposed place to be, you know?
It's so true. And what happens from your experience for, let's say, a heterosexual men-women relationship where the man has been more dominant and the woman has been more submissive? If a man finally is able to surrender, that was the word that you used, I think, which more men can probably resonate with listening to this.
Yeah.
What happens to the man's emotions, their feelings, their outlook on life, whatever they might have been repressing when they're able to surrender? And what happens to women when they reverse that role from being submissive and step into their power?
Anything is possible. That's the really cool part about it. You know what I mean? Like, again, you're right. Submit is very different than surrender. So like, I'm glad that you actually called that out and forward. So thank you for that. Because that could be a really great reframe for people to really connect to.
Because
there's a lot of women that submit, but they don't necessarily feel like they're surrendering either. Right. So it can be this like complex thing that's happening. But what can happen to someone? What I've noticed is that the further along people are on their sexual and erotic journeys and healing and things like that,
right,
I've noticed the less fixed they are and how it sort of, how they flow with it. So what I've noticed is the more healing and more integration that happens, most of the time men and women aren't like really fixed in these roles. They're more like fluid. They might even be more switchy and be like, oh, I might go with the flow here. Like I think about, you know, I think about erotic encounters like partner dancing. And if you think about a tango, for example, like you'll notice like there's a man and woman usually, and the man's leading in the scenario and he's dominating the thing and she's beautiful following him. And next thing you know, she slaps him in the face. Like that is a very, very tango-y thing.
Huh.
She'll slap him in the face and be like, hey, I'm here, you know? And then he'll be like, all right, get over here, you know?
Right.
And there's this moment of like having a little bit of a power struggle and having a moment of that. So the more evolved you are in erotic sense, you're not necessarily fixated on like, I must be dominant and you must be submissive the entire thing. It's just a dance.
Sure.
It's just like a flow of energy.
Yeah.
And not like getting so tied into this idea it's supposed to look a certain way. I think it's really important to remember our evolution is just like very fluid and it can look a lot of different ways for people. But if you're able to kind of fall into something that's the opposite of what you're used to, like you mentioned, men being in their surrender and women being in their power, you'll notice it's the same side of the same coin, like at the end of the day. And it's just like really being connected to the fullness of what life can look like, your full humanity, and not playing small and in this limited way that you've been playing in.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about attraction, it's always that, I mean, it could be a person, it could be a city you wanna live in, it could be a job. It's always that push-pull relationship. It's never one or the other.
Right.
And it's that dance that you mentioned where you can keep that spark alive using the balance of the push and pull. And for people that are in these relationships that want to continue to maintain that desire, that attraction, what are some of the tools that you recommend? And I guess first off, I should mention, I think the first common thing that a lot of people in relationships do when maybe they're ready to go to that next level is to bring in a third partner.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a threesome. It could be going to swing clubs or maybe seeing like a tantric coach or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recommend that? Mm. Or do you recommend fixing, or not, maybe fixing is a bad word, but maybe flaming that desire between those two people first before you bring in a third partner, if that's even what you want to do?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, because kind of what your question is lending itself to is this idea of polarity and how those sort of opposites attract, that magnetism that happens. But if it's too polarized and it pushes people away, then there's no connection. But if it's too polarized, it also could cause conflict, right?
Sure.
So what's that healthy amount of tension? And when I say tension, people get like, oh, tension's bad, isn't it? I'm like, no, tension is actually not bad if it's the right amount, that perfect sweet spot of tension. You know, when you think about extremes, you're thinking about tension being really painful or there's zero indifference, right? And like, there's also this middle ground that's really, really juicy. That's the sustainable place that like feels good for everyone involved. So when people are kind of looking to spice things up and looking at like ways of doing that, I think it can be really risky of looking at stuff outside of the relationship and outside of themselves in order to fix it. I get a little curious around, has there been any sort of ruptures within the relationship that need repair? Is there anything that's not being fully said? Because another way of killing Eros and killing polarity is actually shape-shifting or people-pleasing and actually not really stepping into your fullness of who you are. And you're actually kind of adjusting and contracting yourself into being the perfect person for this relationship. But it's actually fucking killing the energy of the relationship. So getting curious a little bit around like, am I actually in my truth and in my fullness as an individual, as part of this relationship?
Right.
Or is this ways that I actually leave parts of myself behind in order to have peace in this relationship? As a way to be in this relationship at all, I have to kind of cut parts of myself out, because that's not sustainable either. That's not going to help. So once you kind of get a little clearer around like what's actually in the present, what's happening now, and then move it from a place of like exploration from consciousness and from fullness, it's going to be a lot more fun with you and your partner. So I would just get curious, like, you know, it could be a quick fix to get that third person in, or, you know, go to that swinger party. That could be a fix for the moment, but it's probably not going to be a long-term cure.
Yeah, it's an easy one to grab at, right?
Exactly, right. Exactly. So, you know, keeping those things in mind around like, like what is, what's at the core of things, and seeing if we can kind of meet there first and then move from that place.
Yeah,
I mean,
we hear that a lot where if you try to get into a relationship, but the place that you're at in life is trying to look for someone that can fill a hole that, you know, literally fill a hole that literally is missing in you.
Yeah.
And that kind of creates often like that anxious, avoidant attachment style relationship where one person is missing and they hope that this person can fill that hole. And obviously 1+1 should equal 3 in a relationship when you start. But I find myself, as I progress through relationships, that there's places that I didn't even realize that I had weaknesses in that are coming alive that maybe would never have been discovered if I didn't enter into a relationship.
Beautiful.
And it's a constant evolution, right?
Totally. Totally.
But I really like that point that you mentioned.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. That's really beautiful. You know, our relationships can hold so much growth for our evolution, which is so important. And when we think of our partners as the reparative parental figure, in a sense, there can be so much that can be gained there.
Yeah.
But you get curious around, like, is this relationship going to be based on, you know, rewriting the past and, like, you know, kind of fixing things that have happened in the past, or are we also going to live in our destinies as well? And if you can have a healthy balance of both, where it's not just, like, you know, past work, but it's also future work, then you have a really solid relationship there.
It's true. And you can extrapolate that to, you know, if you are tempted to get a third person in a relationship for, you know, a quick fix, you also have to realize, as you mentioned, that, you know, just like you can't be in a relationship unless you fix yourself and your whole, you also have to make sure that the two of you are wholesome before you bring in someone else. So to go back to that,
yeah,
let's talk about the bedroom.
Yes, I love talking about the bedroom.
Me too. So you're in the bedroom and you are presented with a lot of tools that maybe a lot of people aren't aware of. I want to talk about dirty talk for a second.
Okay.
I'm not the best dirty talker, I'm going to be honest.
You have a really great voice for it.
Thank
you. So we
got
to work on that.
We do. Yeah. We do. What are some of the big no-nos when it comes to dirty talk that might turn a partner off, or that just isn't? Because I think, oh, this is repetitive. Or I think, oh, I feel kind of silly doing this.
Sure.
But yeah, talk to me a little bit about those things.
Okay. Well, I will say, as with most things erotic and sexual and kinky, et cetera, that springing it on your partner out of nowhere is probably the worst idea ever. I know people want to be spontaneous, and I know people want to, like, you know, be in the moment. And I think it is so important to still have this foundation around what truly does turn you and your partner on, so you have some guidelines on how to use language to benefit both of your experiences. So often, you know, in the heat of the moment, somebody's like calling someone daddy, and the guy's like, oh, I don't like being called daddy, you know, and like there's things that happen because there was no conversation about it. And it's so important to, like, again, sit down with your partner and be like, let's talk about what turns us on, not just like the physical activities that turn us on, but like, what sort of language would you like to hear? Like, have you noticed there's certain words that you like? Do you like being called a good girl, for example? Do you like being called a dirty little slut? Like, those are two very different scenarios, you know, and like really getting clear on like what feels good to the person in the moment. Is a really important thing to recognize. And also to, like, give yourself some leeway to say, like, hey, we're trying this out and we're just, we may not even really know, but, like, let's give ourselves a little bit of grace while we kind of explore this a little bit. But as far as I know, I feel like I'd really like more reassuring language and praise and things of, like, that I'm sexy and beautiful, and instead of, like, that I'm a dirty bitch, whatever. Right, like, you know what I mean?
Instead of downgrading
it. Also, there's another thing, you know, there's a possessive aspect of dirty talk that might be really important. So not just saying, like, you're a good girl, you're my good girl, you're not a slut, you're my slut. Like, that little difference can make a whole, you know, scene go in a different direction, essentially. So there's, like, these little concepts, because words are spells and language is really, really powerful. And I like to use really affirming language that, you know, supports my partner into remembering their greatness and their brilliance and things like that. Even if they're interested in humiliation, I'm able to kind of elevate that sort of talk, so it actually benefits them in some level. So,
and that's also understanding their love language, right? Like, some people really have a turn on for words and affirmation versus touch, perhaps. Yeah.
And also, so that what you're mentioning is a really good point, because that's an idea of how do I get more attuned and understand the manual of my partner while they understand the manual of me. So love languages is a good thing to know.
Yeah.
Asking them what their erotic blueprint is, it's a really good thing to know. You can
take a quiz. Yeah, okay.
So, the Erotic Blueprints was created by a woman named Jaya Ma, and her work has been really helpful for people to be able to attune to their own desires. And it's similar to the love languages, except it's for turn on, intimacy, sex, and arousal. So you can take a quiz online and you can find out, based on your answers, what erotic blueprint you might be. It's energetic, sensual, sexual, kinky, and shapeshifter. But each of those five blueprints have a different way of getting turned on. But if you know your partner's energetic blueprint, it could be good information on how to navigate getting them turned on based on that blueprint.
That's powerful. Yeah. It's like a framework.
If your partner's like a sexual, for example, they test high as a sexual, dirty talk, like, I want to fuck you, take off your clothes, suck my dick. Like really direct and really straightforward sexually based language is going to like light them up, but it's not going to do the same for an energetic. An energetic might get scared and want to run away.
Interesting.
And an energetic might be like, I'm really safe. No, you're safe. I'm here with you. Let's look in each other's eyes. Take a deep breath with me. Tell me what you're feeling right now. And like that language might be more about depth and slowness and a noticing of the body. That might get an energetic like revving to go, you know? So see how different those two are.
Yeah.
So that could be really helpful for people to understand like who is my partner and who am I?
You mentioned sexual, energetic.
Yes. Sensual.
Sensual.
Kinky. And shapeshifter.
And shapeshifter.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, wow, interesting. Got it.
Yeah. Off the top of your head, any idea what that might be for you?
I don't know what a shapeshifter exactly is.
Yeah. So a shapeshifter has sort of like all the blueprints in one and tends to be highly erotically intelligent. Okay. And tends to have a lot of intelligence in the bedroom and is very easily attuned with their partners, but they also love a lot of variety. So they want to switch it up constantly. Hmm. They're really good at meeting the needs of their partners without any problem whatsoever, but they are rarely ever feeling that they get met and filled up. So there's the shadows and the lights of each blueprint, actually.
Yeah. I don't know, actually. I'm going to take the quiz, though.
Let's take the quiz. Get back to me.
I'm going to text you. I'm going to get some tips from you.
I like it. I bet you're like a mix of kinky and energetic, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I feel like kinkies are very, forget about the whole spanking thing, but kinkies are very creative. Hmm. And they're really quick and clever and sharp as well. So they are really high on creativity, imagination. Hmm. They're really good connectors as well.
Well, speaking of that.
Yes.
When it comes to role play.
Yes.
What
we're talking about all my favorite things, basically.
All the things I don't know about. So this is great. What questions do we ask our partners when we want to get into role play?
I love the question about role play because oftentimes people are thinking about a few things like, you know, a teacher, student, boss, employee, like there's like these kind of classic
doctor, nurse,
like there's these sort of classic scenarios. But when you think about role play, it could also be a way of infusing polarity, right? Because you can think about what are the opposites of something. For example, in Tantra, there's something called atavism, which is a way of kind of playing with these dynamics, these polar dynamics in an erotic setting where it could be, instead of dominant submissive, it could be artist and muse. Like I'm going to be the creator and you're going to be the inspiration. It could be tiger antelope. Like, what would it mean if we brought out our primal aspects of our beingness and we brought out our animalistic parts of us? I'm going to hunt you and you're going to be my prey. Like, how would that actually inspire us in the bedroom? Or it could be sun and moon. Like, what would it mean if you were the void and I was the essence of everything? Hmm. Like, you know, you can be really poetic with these ideas and think about, like, instead of just putting on a bunch of costumes and pretending to be different people, which is also fucking awesome, super fun, because it's nice to take a break from ourselves and be someone else for a while. But you're tapping into archetypes. And when you have an idea of like tapping into different archetypes, then you actually understand that I'm not just this like one-dimensional human being. I actually have a symphony of different personalities within myself in the most healthiest way possible. Sure. Like I'm not talking about it in a disorder. I'm talking about like I'm a complex human being with a lot of layers. What if we were to bring these other parts of me online that don't always get a lot of attention in my 9-to-5 job? Like, what if there is some polar opposites of who you are in your work life that you could actually play out in your erotic life that could be really fulfilling for you and your partner? So you could get really creative around this and play with it so much more than just, you know, putting on a doctor's uniform or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the key one is like, you're not trying to escape from who you are. You're exploring the different possibilities of who you could be and kind of letting those imaginations run wild.
That could be, so that's the thing that we're talking about today, Sean, is like, how do we look at things that are really surface, like dirty talk, like spanking, like role play? These are the topics that we just brought up during this conversation. And sure. what we're doing is we're diving beneath the surface of what those things are
yep.
and how it can actually not only be an erotic, fun thing that could be pleasurable for me and my partner, but it actually could benefit us somehow in a higher level sense. And if we bring that into consciousness, then we can bring that outside of the bedroom. We can actually bring more of that energy into our work, into our friendships, into society. Mm. And bringing that fullness, I mean, that's magnetic. Like, people love being around people who are in their fullness, you know, and in yeah. their unlimited possibility. Like, that's the people that are the most successful, even.
Yeah. Talk to me about that, because yeah, I think yeah. people see the work in the bedroom mm-hmm. between partners and they think just more immediate, which is sexual pleasure, and maybe right. it's an enhancement in the relationship between two people. Mm-hmm. But I think it's rare that people talk about what it does to yourself, an individual self, where totally. It's not just about the sexual part, it's about what you bring to the workplace yeah. that you mentioned. It could be the family, it could be your own confidence. Mm. Like, talk to me a little bit about the benefits when we're able to open up more sexually in ourselves.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's interesting because that kind of energy, the sex energy we're talking about, the erotic energy, is our life force energy. And it's part of our creativity and our aliveness and our vibrancy. And it's a shame and a waste if we're just keeping that a lot, like that vibrancy, aliveness, and pleasure, orgasmic pleasure, in the bedroom. Like, that's such a small way of living life, and that's such low-hanging fruit. So, like, the idea of, like, if you can bring that orgasmic, vibrant, creative life force outside of the bedroom, that's not sexual. We're not right. talking about being inappropriate or, you know, infringing on other people's rights. We're not talking about that. We're talking about bringing that level of aliveness and creativity and vibrancy outside of what you're creating in the bedroom and into all facets of your life. And knowing how to channel that energy, I think Abraham Hicks actually said, he who has the power is the one who can influence energy. So how are you influencing your own energy, and how do you influence the people around you and their energy? When you have that as a mastery in the bedroom, in the most vulnerable, sensitive place you can have it, you can take that into any scenario,
right.
ultimately, because that is the core of our beingness. But that's usually the part of ourselves that people don't really take a look at most times.
It's not the tangible part, but we all
Correct.
Have been in a room, or we've been on a date, or we've been in the workplace talking to people, and you talk about it, right? Oh, this mm-hmm. person has good vibes, or there was certain
totally.
Energy about this venue,
this conference,
this event.
I feel good when I'm around them. I feel more alive when I'm, and hopeful when I'm around them. You know, it's
right.
infectious. It's
right.
contagious.
And that's what you're talking about,
that's
right?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right,
and it's something that people do naturally, and that's amazing, but it also can be learned, and it can be cultivated just as much
right.
as well. And
right.
it, there's a lot of different ways you can go about it. I just like the way I do it, because I think it's the most fun and pleasurable way of doing
sure.
it, essentially. But
sure.
there's lots of ways you can access this side of yourself.
Powerful.
Yeah.
So we talked about verbal,
yes.
the dirty talk. We talked about using creativity, which is the role playing.
Yeah.
When it comes to touch, I know you mentioned there's like five different elements of
yeah.
touch.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just walk us through, like, because people think of touching as spanking, basically,
right.
when it comes to the bedroom, right? But there's so many layers and different varieties that you can incorporate touching into pleasuring your partner.
Absolutely.
What are those five? And can we just quickly go through those?
Absolutely. So, you know, I like, this is a very tantric lesson, just wanting you to know
yeah.
where it's coming from. And we talk about the five elements of touch. So we think about what the elements are. So if we're thinking about fire, for example, the physical touch I would be giving someone would be rough, and it would be invigorating, and it would maybe even create heat in my body and their bodies, et cetera. Water would be like really flowing along the person's skin, and, like, you know, creating an idea of just flowing of energy. Air would be very, very light. It could be just like the fingertips or the very tips of the pads of the fingers or the nails.
Right.
You know, it could be like blowing on somebody's skin as well. You could actually bring your own air into
it. That's the air,
it.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. Earth would just be like really deep pressure touch, where it just feels like you're really grounding the person you're with just like pressure and stillness and intention. And then ether is just not, it's a hovering over the skin, where you're actually using energetic touch, where you're not actually physically touching the person, but you're moving your energy along their bodies and giving them that sort of sense. So it's actually really cool when you think about bringing in the elements to the erotic world, because then you're sort of feeling this communion with nature almost. And it's actually really natural for humans that we've kind of gotten away from. We're so sort of dependent on our sex tech, which is great. You know, it's nice to have options and bells and whistles.
Yeah.
But people become really dependent on, you know, things that are outside of themselves in order for them to have pleasure. So it's like, how do we get back to our capacity and what we actually already have and what we're already sitting on and just go deeper with it?
Yeah, it just reminds me of the layers that you go into. I mean, just within the one component of maintaining desire and attraction in the bedroom, you just laid out five different tools that people can use. Most people think about, okay, so you do foreplay and then you penetrate, and
yes, that's kind of it, right?
And maybe within foreplay, you use certain tongue movements, and that's kind of
totally
the vast of their knowledge based on what we've been educated on.
Yes. But it's like, you know, anyone can tie someone else up. Anyone can spank another person. But if you can really get into someone's head, if you can get into somebody's heart, like that's a completely different penetration, right? Mm. So like we went through these elements of touch, but it's also like, how do I touch your mind with my voice? Like, how do I touch your emotions, you know, with my energy? Like, how do I move you with the other parts of my beingness? You know what I mean?
Sure.
And like expand even bigger, because it's just infinite, the possibility, Sean, of like how an erotic scenario can look like. And our genitals may never make an appearance the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just turned on by life. And I feel that like wanting to be penetrated by all that life offers and the abundance of life even, and like bringing that into everything that I do. And, you know, when I'm working with people, I'm like, how do I penetrate their heart? Like, how do I get into their hearts? Not like, you know, how do I turn them on? You know, there's these different ways of kind of playing with that that feels just a lot more juicier and a lot more resonant with me.
Sure. And you claim yourself as a sapiosexual, which I am as well.
Yes.
And
isn't it so good?
Yeah. I mean, you do need some intellectual conversations. Yeah. You need to be able to rile the emotions. I don't know how common that is for girls versus guys, which kind of brings me to my next question is, when it comes to attraction or maintaining desire, are there differences between men and women that you find that are more common?
You know, when it comes to like on a biological level, there is a way that men are, you know, leading more with what their sense of sight says, like what's happening visually.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. And for women, it's really about resources and also how the person makes them feel. So it may not be as dependent on physicality as men. There's also in the erotic sense, when we're thinking about turning people on, there might be a way that if you're a man, you might be leaning more towards being turned on in a visual way, as women are more auditory. And want to actually have descriptive language and actually feel like it's being described to them in certain ways. So like the dirty talk in that sense would be very different. So dirty talk is great. If you're a man listening to this, dirty talk for women is usually a really great way to go. Of course, get consent, just like everything else.
Sure.
But most times, yeah, that's really what women are longing for, is to feel like that it doesn't have to result to this physicality, that there actually can be an emotional component to their eroticism, so that they can like kind of open into their fullness. And
it doesn't have to be even
it.
When you're in person, right? It could be
exactly
different.
You don't have to be in the same room, in the same city. Like, you know, it's just the possibilities are so big in that sense. So so in that way, playing with those strengths and weaknesses is a really fun way of playing it, but also opening up your partner's conditioning as well. So like in the erotic blueprints, a lot of men test as sexuals. Now, are they actual sexuals, or did they just like learn everything that they know about sex from porn?
Right.
You know, you're not going to see a lot of energetic porn where they're just eye gazing and like playing with energy. Like that's not the kind of porn that's available on Pornhub. I haven't seen it yet anyway. So men are sort of conditioned and programmed to look at sex in a certain sense. And just like women are through their fairy tale, like, you know, sort of movies that they're watching. So it's good to also kind of push the edges of that as well, and kind of expand into other areas of turn on and exploration, so that you're not just necessarily staying in these places that you were programmed to be in the beginning.
Yeah. Very insightful, Kimmy. Final question for you.
Okay.
with the work that you're doing.
Yes, I will spank you. Gosh, I've been waiting for you to ask me this question.
Off camera. that's just subscribe to my OnlyFans. With the work that you're doing now in terms of serving others, what's the impact that you want to have for others listening?
I just want to remind people of what's possible. Like, I've been able to witness in my own life and in others just how expansive and life-affirming it is to actually know that you have your own internal medicine, that you actually don't necessarily need anything outside of yourself to have everything that you want. And that is, to me, the most important thing, because I feel like the powers that be do not want us to know this. They don't want us to really have the sense that we are designed for pleasure and our bodies were made for pleasure and that we are worthy and deserving of it just because we breathe, not because of what we do for others, but because we exist. So for me, like, that's my biggest impact, is just reminding people of the truth and reminding them who they are and what's possible.
Well, I appreciate it, Kimmy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming
on
the show.
Thanks for having me here.